Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, and welcome to Detroit Meets the Bard. I'm your host, Sam White. Thanks for joining us this Sunday afternoon. We're back with an all new episode of the podcast, and I appreciate those of you who are tuning in. Thanks so much. So I wanted to make sure to shout out and say thank you to all of the people who have supported Shakespeare in Detroit's fundraiser so far. As many of you know, we are currently fundraising, doing some crowdfunding on Indiegogo.com. We're always fundraising, but we're specifically fundraising on Indiegogo right now. So far we've brought in, I think we just got a new donation, so let me check the balance right now or what we've raised so far. We've raised $5,685 so far. We had a really big goal of $150,000 because we wanted to sustain ourselves for the next 2 years, but we're going to keep raising and see how much we can get to. We still have 25 days left to raise as much money as possible. There's some really cool perks that go along with those or go along with your donations. If you give, such as a handwritten note from me saying thank you. We're all out of VIP tickets for Henry V on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the show, and then all general admission tickets for Henry V are sold out. But we still have four pair of tickets to the opening night performance of Henry V on March 23rd. If you go to Indiegogo, you can give a donation of $75. You get a couple of pair of tickets, and you also get pre-show refreshments, and you get to meet the cast, and you also get early venue access. We're going to let you in before we let the general admission folks in if you donate $75 to Shakespeare in Detroit's Indiegogo campaign. We also have a few copies, signed copies, of Margaret Atwood's Angel Catbird available for $100 donations, and then we also have four copies signed by my friend and wonderful supporter and, of course, an icon, Margaret Atwood, her retelling of The Tempest Taxied. We have a $110 gift certificate to Luminary Salon and Spa for a $150 donation. That spa and salon is in Rochester, Michigan. And then we have a $200 prize pack. You get a $150 Bell Tire gift card, which you can use for auto service or tires in Michigan, Northern Ohio, and Indiana. And then we have, for $250, you get a suite night at Homestead Suites. The certificate is good through June 1st of this year. And then for a $350 donation, you get a Shakespeare in Detroit hoodie, and those are really sweet, let me tell you. Very cool. You get a $25 gift card to Hard Rock Cafe, and then you get to have coffee with me. Yeah, so please give your gift, your donation, of course, is taxable because we are a nonprofit organization. Help us get as far as we can in the next 25 days. It's all going towards Henry and Hamlet and bringing high-quality professional productions to this beautiful city that we all love. So today, I thought that I'd take some time and give a bit of a synopsis or a summary for those folks who maybe don't know a lot about Henry V or have never read the play and maybe never seen it. Again, we don't have any tickets left, any general admission tickets left for our Henry V production. It's a chamber theater experience, so there weren't a ton of tickets, and it's kind of an exclusive thing. But for those of you who are lucky enough to get tickets, we have a summary available for you. For those of you who weren't able to get tickets, again, you can still get VIP tickets for the opening night day of the show, or opening night of the show, which is the 23rd of March. So, yeah, and I'll keep everyone posted if we have any cancellations and any more general admission tickets become available. But I wanted to provide a bit of a summary of Henry V, because maybe Henry V isn't as popular as, say, Macbeth or Romeo and Juliet. And I happen to love this play, and I want everybody to get as excited for it as I am, because it really is a pertinent, timely, wonderful play, as all of Shakespeare's works are, and but especially poignant right now it is because of the time that we're living in here in the States and just in the world in general. So here's my summary for the show. Thanks for listening, and I hope at the end of the summary it opens a bit of the story for you, and there's more understanding about maybe why I chose this play for this season and how timely and how much it parallels the world that we live in right now. But the story was written about 1599, 1600, something like that, by Shakespeare. It's quite a complex story and a powerful story about this epic king, Henry V, and his men. And it speaks to nationalism and Henry's military success. But at the same time, it warns of the dangers of going to battle. On one hand, Henry is this bigger-than-life king who ultimately leads his army to victory, but this victory isn't black or white. It's very gray as life can be, because there are moments when Henry, I'm telling you, he's so authentic, he's wonderful, he's sincere, but then there are other moments where it can be argued that he's treacherous or he's selfish and deceitful. It begs the question of what is good leadership. I'll repeat that because that's really, really timely right now. What is good leadership? What are the qualities of a good leader? When faced with a challenge, is it acceptable to make certain sacrifices of character to win? That's something to just allow to ruminate in your brain, let those cognitions kind of wrap themselves around that question. And then come see the show or read the play, even better, too. Do both, actually. Come see the show. Although tickets are sold out, we do have a few available for opening night VIP. But most of all, read the play. But that's what I love about Shakespeare. That's why Shakespeare matters. These stories may seem beyond our contemporary cognitions because people, maybe when they think of Shakespeare, they think of horses and armor and sword fighting and all of these elements that people associate with Shakespeare, you know, kings and queens. But at the heart of these stories is our humanity. Costumes change, technology changes, our humanity does not. The core of what makes us flesh and blood, with needs and wants, wins, losses, and everything in between. And what an interesting story Henry V is to read only a few weeks after what has been quite a politically intense climate here in our country. And as we embark on, or as we experience, new leadership. Now let's start with the first act of Henry, shall we? Henry is contemplating whether or not he wants to go to battle with France. The French king and France, of course, aren't having it. They have underestimated Henry and said that he was too immature to rule or win, and they dismiss his claims to France. The Dauphin, the king's son, sends Henry tennis balls as an insult in reference to the king's youth. He should, in short, or in layman's terms, go play and party and do what youth do, as Henry once did during his prince, right? He hung out with his friends, drank, and appeared to be irresponsible. But he's grown up, and we hear and watch some commentary from the Archbishop of Canterbury about how the king has changed dramatically. Henry is encouraged to go to battle by Canterbury, so he's feeling good, and he's ready to do just that when he gets a message from France. Montjoy, the French herald, delivers the following to Henry in Act 1, Scene 2. In answer of which claim, the prince, our master, say that you savor too much of your youth, and bids you be advised there's naught in France that can be with a nimble galliard won. You cannot rebel into dukedoms there. He therefore sends you, meter your spirit this ton of treasure, and in lieu of this, desires you let the dukedoms that you claim hear no more of you. This, the Dauphin speaks. Henry V says, what treasure, uncle? He's talking to Exeter at this point. Exeter, he opens his chest and he says, tennis balls, my liege. Now, Henry answers quite perfectly and cleverly, I think, in this instance. It's quite an interesting response. He says this. We are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with us. His present and your pains we thank you for. When we have matched our rackets to these balls, we will, in France, by God's grace, play a set, shall strike his father's crown into the hazard. Tell him he hath made a match with such a wrangler that all the courts of France will be disturbed with chases. And we understand him well, how he comes over with us wilder days, not measuring what use we made of them. We never valued this poor seat of England, and therefore, living hence, did give ourselves the barbarous license. 'Tis ever common that men are merriest when they are from home. But tell the Dauphin, I will keep my state, be like a king, and show my cell of greatness when I do rouse me in my throne of France, for that I have laid by my majesty and plotted like a man for working days. But I will rise there with so full a glory that I will dazzle all the eyes of France. Yea, strike the Dauphin blind to look on us, and tell the pleasant prince this mock of his hath turned his balls to gunstones, and his soul shall stand sore, charged for the wasteful vengeance that shall fly with him. For many a thousand widows shall this his mock mock out of their dear husbands, mock mothers from their sons, mock castles down, and some are yet ungotten and unborn that shall have cause to curse the Dauphin's scorn. But this lies all within the will of God. to whom I do appeal, and in whose name tell you the Dauphin I am coming on to venge me as I may and to put forth my rightful hand in a well-hallowed cause. So get you hence in peace and tell the Dauphin his jest will savor but of shallow wit when thousands weep more than you did laugh at it. Convey them with safe conduct. Fare you well. See, Henry isn't amused, and he basically relays the message back to the Dauphin that he's going to turn the tennis balls into cannonballs, and you'll see just how immature I am. The sarcasm and the wit is alive and well in this exchange, you guys. The Dauphin has sent a gift, which was customary for leaders to do out of respect for other leaders, right? But in this case, he has turned it into a joke or a gag gift. But Henry isn't thin-skinned or easily shook. In the first act of the play, we gain tremendous confidence in Henry because he's cool, because he's calm, because he's collected, and he showcases the full potential of his valor as he contemplates his battle with France. This guy has his stuff together, okay? He knows what to say and how to navigate his way in the world with wit, with vigor, and with some humor. He is in charge, we believe, and for the most part, I would say. By the Act II prologue, the chorus is telling us that England is ready for war against France. There's a conspiracy to kill Henry. Cut to Act II, Scene 1, where Shakespeare takes us to a scene with commoners in the play. Now, I have to tell you that, and don't be disappointed, you guys, we have cut the commoners from our version of the show, which means that you won't see them when you come out to our venue, the historical Stearns Mansion, because we have condensed the play down to 2 hours because it's a chamber theater experience and we don't want to have you just sitting in this room in the mansion for hours and hours, but I promise you that you will love the play still and it will make total sense the way that we cut the play. The cut is by the director, D.B. Schroeder. Shout out to D.B. But the commoners you won't see in our version of the show. The transition is quite different. Then, so we go, instead of going to the commoners in Act II, we go directly to the action, which reveals that Henry has some knowledge that someone is plotting to kill him. He reveals to Scrope, Cambridge, and Gray that he knows exactly what they're up to and arrests them for treason. They beg for forgiveness, and he says no, because he has to protect England's national security. Henry is a huge believer in God, and he thanks him for revealing the traitors to him, and he also takes the knowledge of his traitors from God is a sign that he should most certainly go to war with France. And just as a sidebar, in the case we have Henry fans in the audience, Henry's friend who was banished by the time we get to Henry V, Falstaff, we hear in Act II that he has passed away, he died. And, you'll read that when you read the original text or the original non-Shakespeare Detroit version, right? You'll read that Falstaff has passed away, that reference is there. So now we're done with England. We cut to France, and King Charles and the Dauphin are talking about the impending war with France. The king is concerned, but the Dauphin dismisses his dad's concerns because he doesn't take Henry seriously at all and does not see him as a threat. Exeter relays a message to the king and the Dauphin that they should just hand the throne over and not to give England any issues, because if he doesn't, France will see the wrath of England. The Dauphin isn't having it and dares England to try to invade. And so here we go. Here we go, you guys. Henry and his men, they're going to war. We're now beginning the siege of Harfleur. One of the beautiful things that I love so much about Henry is that it's such a straightforward play, and we have the chorus to lead us along the way, every step of the way. And so they tell us in Act 3, in the prologue, they tell us to get ready to leave England and head to France. They're going to war. One of my very favorite phrases from the play that I find very inspirational in my life as an entrepreneur and just in life in general is from the third act. In peace, there is nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility, but when the blast of war blows in our ears, then imitate the action of the tiger. There's so many circumstances in life that come up, and you may be faced with the decision of what to do, how to react, what action you should take, and I believe that quote speaks to that. Knowing which battles to fight and knowing when to be still and modest are crucial to having a strategic process in business and a thoughtful process in life, knowing which battles to fight and which ones to perhaps not engage in. It's a beautiful, inspirational monologue, one that evokes tremendous emotion, and I'll read it now for you in full. Once more into the breach, dear friends, once more, or close the wall up with our English dead in peace. There is nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility, but when the blast of war blows in our ears and imitate the action of the tiger, stiffen the sinews, summon up the blood, disguise fair nature with hard-favored rage, then lend the eye a terrible aspect. Let pry through the portage of the head, like the brass cannon, like the brow, overwhelm it as fearfully as doth a galled rock, or hang and jutty his confounded base, swilled with a wild and wasteful ocean. Now set the teeth and stretch the nostril wide. Hold hard the breath and bend up every spirit to his full height. On, you noblest English, whose blood is set with from fathers of warproof, fathers that, like so many Alexanders, have in these parts from morn till even fought, and sheathe their swords for lack of argument. Dishonor not your mothers. Now attest that those whom you called fathers did beget you. Be copy now to men of grosser blood, and teach them how to war. And you, good yeomen, whose limbs are, whose limbs were made in England, show us here the metal of your pasture. Let us swear that you are worth your breeding, which I doubt not, for there is none of you so mean and base that hath not noble luster in your eyes. I see you stand like greyhounds in the slip, straining up the start, upon the start. The game's afoot. Follow your spirit, and upon this charge, cry, God for Harry, England, and St. George. It's a lot of words, isn't it? I think, if I'm correct, and I can't remember what the count was exactly. Is it 3,297 lines? That might be right. I'm sounding very specific, but I know that Henry is one of the plays with a ton of lines. It's up there in like the top five. I'm sure of that part of it. Now, towards the latter part of Act 3, Henry's soldiers are beginning to grow weary and need a bit of rest from the fighting. They're tired. They're sick. There are things are looking a bit down for the English at this point in the play because they've been fighting so hard and they've been making strides, but geez, they're exhausted, right? In the meantime, King Charles and the Dauphin, along with the Constable, are speaking about the fact that Henry is now in France and easily moving around without any issues there. The Dauphin's disdain and underestimation of the English, however, it continues. Now, sidebar, the fact that the Dauphin's sister Kate may end up marrying Henry V at this point is probably not sitting well with him either. The French are very well aware of the English army status at this point, and they figure or assume that they will probably get tired of fighting and turn around at some point. Building or expanding one's kingdom, it's never easy, you know? It makes me think of Detroit as we're currently in what many have called a rebirth or a renaissance. There have been some strides in the city with new businesses coming to town, but expanding our horizons isn't easy or possible in one swoop. It takes endurance. It takes steadfastness and strategy. It takes the ability to get beyond the inconvenience of battling big enemies that could be compared to the French army, right? It takes a lot of fight to battle things like blight or a segregated Southeast Michigan. It takes might to challenge things like an unfair educational system. We can grow weary. We might become exhausted from the amount of work that it takes to turn the conditions of our city around, much like the English became weary of their quest to conquer France. So what do we do? As I mentioned at the top of this summary for Henry V, it really does inspire the question of what is true leadership? What is good leadership? What makes someone a good or bad leader? How do you lead a kingdom where everyone benefits? Do good leaders have some good traits and some bad traits? And do good leaders do bad things sometimes for the greater good? Henry V is such a powerful, relevant play that truly speaks to our day, our age, and our city. For example, We had to cut a bit of Sid's version of the play out, but Henry requires a bit of this part of the story out. But one thing about Henry is that he requires his men to refrain from abusing the French. The French folks they encounter, he doesn't want them to do things like stealing or taking advantage of people. But it's interesting for him to feel that way and to have that sort of rule when at the end of the day he's trying to take the French crown, right, by invading France. There's this overarching sentiment, however, of Henry V, you know, he has the good about him, he has the bad about him. He's a very complex leader, but again, it inspires the question as to whether or not leadership is truly black or white. In Act 4, we've made it to Agincourt. Henry is trying to keep his men motivated and up for the task. He disguises himself actually as being a commoner, and he goes among his men to see what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they're doing. And he shares in this act, too, that it's very isolating being a king. It bears a heavy, heavy weight that he at times struggles to carry and that he can't share with his men because he has to deal with it all on his own. You can't tell your men, the folks that work for you, who are fighting for you, that you feel this way. You have to forge on. You have to keep it going. But it allows us to have some insights into what he's feeling, what's going on in his head and his heart. Henry, being a very spiritual person, a very religious person too, he prays to God to forgive him of his father's sins. He prays that God will give him strength and courage because he's probably too grown a bit weary. And he realizes, oh man, the success of this siege are all up to me. I'm leading this. I started this and I have to finish this. And that's a lot of pressure on him. He prays, oh God of battle, steal my soldiers' hearts. Possess them not with fear, take from them now the sense of reckoning. If the opposed numbers pluck their hearts from them, not today, O Lord, oh, not today. Think not upon the fault my father made encompassing the throne. I, Richard's body, have interred anew, and on it have bestowed more contrite tears. From it issued forced drops of blood. 500 poor I have in yearly pay, who twice a day their withered hands hold up toward heaven to part in blood, and I've built two chantries where the sad and solemn priest sings still for Richard's soul. More will I do, though all that I can do is nothing worth, since that my penitence comes after all imploring pardon. He prays that his men are ready for battle, the battle of their lives the following day. The French, however, they're feeling cocky and they can't lose, they think, at this point. They feel, without the hesitation of the doubt, that they will win the battle at Agincourt. The English are outnumbered by the French, and it truly isn't looking good for them, but onward they go. When Henry, in Act 4, Scene 3, delivers probably the biggest monologue of the play, the St. Crispin's Day speech, which goes something like this. If we are marked to die, we are now to do our country lost, and if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor, God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man, by Jove, I am not covetous for gold, nor care I, who doth feed upon my cost, it yearns me not, if men my garments wear, such outward things dwell not in my desires. He goes on, and we all know this speech. And if you haven't read the speech before, I encourage you to do it because I don't have enough time during this podcast, and I want to tell you guys a little bit more about the venue. So they have the battle at Agincourt, and the English win against all odds. And, there's a lot of things that happen in this play. Again, for me, it just the reason that I chose the play is because of how beautifully, how wonderfully, and how on point it is when it comes to looking at it from the perspective or from the lens of 2017. It's so relevant. It's so powerful. It's so who we are now, you know. Again, costumes change. People, humanity do not, and that's why we're doing this show. I could go on and on about this play. I hope the tidbits that I've share it with you today, offer some insights. But again, I'm encouraging anyone who's listening to this to please play for yourself. And if you're coming to the show, you get to see this play come to life and what's going to be a really beautiful, intimate, wonderful, exciting chamber theater experience where you get an up-close and personal play with, you know, the actors, and you get to look at the costumes up close and personal. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be wonderful. So let me tell you about I need to tell you guys about the venue. The venue is called the Stearns Mansion. It's a historical home in West Village, in the historical neighborhood of West Village. It was once owned by Detroit's top legal, underlined legal, drug family. At the helm of this family was Frederick K. Stearns. He was born in Buffalo, New York. He was a druggist. Today that would be called a pharmacist. He built this beautiful home where we're performing on Jefferson Avenue. The address is 8109 East Jefferson Avenue. In 1902, Frederick Stearns' house, it's actually called Red Gables, where he lived with his wife and children. It's still there. We're performing there. It has this beautiful herringbone brick and dormer windows, very similar to Shakespeare's homes, and also a bit of a nod to the original Globe Theater. The Daily Detroit website is at dailydetroit.com. They recently posted a story about Frederick K. Stearns. They posted it on December 26, 2016. And, yeah, you can check it out. We've posted it on our Facebook page before, so you should, you know, yeah, check it out, look at it, get some of the history and context for the home. We're going to perform in the ballroom of the mansion. There will be about 50 to 60 seats in there a night in the round. Again, a very up-close and personal experience. For those folks who have bought VIP tickets, you'll get to enjoy the reception in the dining hall of the home and meet some of the actors. And we're going to have a silent auction for anyone who's interested in receiving really cool prizes, one of them including a crown directly from our wardrobe department. You can enjoy that. Yeah, it's going to be quite an event. And I just wanted to spend some time today to get to really rally around the performance because it really already has a lot of great energy around it, being that tickets are pretty much sold out. And so, yeah, we're doing it March 23rd through the 26th of 2017. We're excited to be in this historical home. Again, one of the things that I love about Detroit is that there is no lack of venues, structures, and places to perform. And so we're excited to do this site-specific performance. The costumes will play homage to the space in that they will be a nod to the early 1900s. I'm actually going to speak to our costume designer at one point. I'll let you know when that interview is coming up. His name is Cal Schwartz. He's our director of costume design for the company itself, and he's created beautiful costumes for our plays for the past almost four years and for four seasons now. And so, yeah, he can give you more detail on that when I talk to him or Detroit Meets the Bard. In the meantime, I want to thank you all for tuning in today. I want to encourage you to please support Shakespeare in Detroit with a donation today. Every amount helps. Any amount helps. $5, you know, buys water for our cast, keeps them hydrated on those hot summer days when we're performing out in the park. And, you know, $100 helps pay the rent. Yeah, so every amount helps. It all adds up. You can go to ShakespeareInDetroit.com to learn more about the company and what we have coming up this season. And I thank you again. This is Sam White for Detroit Meets the Bard. Tune in next week, Sunday. We always have a new episode at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's been lovely talking to you today about Henry V, and we'll talk to you again next week. Have a beautiful rest of your Sunday. Bye-bye.